Welcome back to another Tromedy podcast, everybody. Wow, it's been quite some time since I've put one up here, but I apologize for that. It's just been your old pal Kenneth Allen going through some stuff. It's been a little difficult going through the cancer, and that is nothing to be said about what this episode is about. This is about the USAR companies in San Jose that single-handedly saved 300-plus people with not one casualty during the floods of February. And it's just amazing to me that we have these kinds of heroes working for the city every single day. They ended up working 3 days straight in the mud, the rain, up to their necks in some situations, in water, cutting homeless away from trees and stop signs, driving around and picking up hundreds of people in boats and rescuing them to safety. I swear, San Jose, if you guys don't know how incredible your rescuers are, you are not looking in the right place. You are not seeing the heroism every single day that's there to save you just in case something goes wrong. I hope you're all doing well out there. More to come on my own illness. I think I'm doing good. Just so you know, MRI looked good. I did one not too long ago, but just been dealing with tired and cold and somewhat sick. So I don't want to get too much into me. I want to get into talking these brave men up. They're the people that I wish I could be at some point during my career. And they're out there every day doing this stuff. Thanks again to everybody that took care of me and brought me into the station and just said, "Hey man, where the hell have you been?" You know, and I got a chance to hang out with Cruz again and feel normal for a few hours and just hang with everybody over at Station 34. So thank you, gentlemen. Mensch, you guys are mensches. And without any, you know, any more accolades and any more fanfare, I just want you to pay attention to this podcast and hear how you get all of these humble heroes that don't want to talk, and then slowly but surely they start passing around the microphone and telling you the story. And it was, you know, it's because of a couple of people, of their behest, and me just kind of playing around with them and having fun. So I'm glad that I got this interview with everybody, and most of the people that were on the flood call. Okay, everybody, please pay attention, enjoy, and I apologize that the audio is just kind of passed around and beaten and bopped and stuff, but that's what you get when you're talking to real heroes. All right, everyone, enjoy. Take care. Well, I'll fill in the blanks in the meantime. No, I'm saying I just hit it.
You know, Ken's like the best guy I know.
Here you go. Right back at you.
So, let me see. It started, what day did we start off with when the rescue story came in?
The first rescue was the 21st. That was the two men and the woman that were trapped out in the middle of the...
And our actually 23's first.
Yeah, the 23. Is this the homeless couple?
Yeah,
homeless couple. Okay, so, seen footage of that. Yeah, and you were on that. You were rescue.
So we were on all of them. So, first of all, it started off in the first of the day. We had a conference call with OES the night before.
That's what I heard, on the 21st, and, right.
Yeah, so we were here. We had a conference call with the Water District, with the EOC, with OES. They were all on a conference call predicting something pretty big. But, again, some of the things they were talking about, like the trailer park, the Golden Wheel trailer park, they said, okay, that wall's going to hold. We're fine. That won't flood. It flooded.
It totally did.
So we decided, the chief decided, Chief Cravello, who's here, decided to upstaff the two overtime engines. Gotcha. With four people apiece. So we had an additional eight people that day, that morning, that were water rescue trained with dry suits, PFDs, which are personal flotation devices, and helmets. So we all showed up at the station here, did a round table, got our game plan. They all put their dry suits on, everybody had equipment. And we ended that around, I don't know, 10 o'clock or so. And one of the engines was still here, and the bell went off, and the water rescues began. And they didn't stop until we were done with the trailer park evac 2.5 days later.
So were you on the same thing, same crew, or were you guys getting relieved on scene, or how was that working?
So we were the same crew.
For 3 days.
And we, so we were about to get off shift from the Los Lagos call, and the call came in, then the change of shift, and we went right to that the neighborhood, the flooding call.
26 is there.
Yeah, the Welch Avenue, and what's it, not, the name of the streets. So we were there all day, and then we just stayed, and then they even kept us the next day just for extra staffing because we just weren't sure what was going to happen. And mm-hmm. it was an absolute luxury. Like I said, when we upstaffed those two engines, the first water rescue we showed up on, normally we have 8 people that are trained. We had 16 people in dry suits trained to do a water rescue. We've never had that. It was a huge luxury.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first time in the San Jose history we've done that, and it was the absolute perfect time to do it. So
right.
we made a really good decision to do that. And it worked beautifully because normally we have a hard time filling all the needed safety positions with 8 people, and we were able to fill everything.
So you were running 16 on one call.
Absolutely.
And then did you guys branch out? You were hitting different areas. You had Los Lagos. You had East Williams. You had
yeah, so we had the Notting Hill up off Oakland Road. That was the first one. And then we went to the South Bay Mobile Home Park later on in the day for a flooding call. And then Paulo and I walked some people out of another flooded car area that on Berryessa. Mm-hmm. And then the next, and so those we all just stayed together as basically one big 32-person crew. And then the next day we went to the Los Lagos area, did that huge event.
Yeah.
And then that event turned out to be a lot smaller than initially came in as, because we were told initially there's 25 plus people in the creek, in trees.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we're like, holy crap, we're going to have to be ordering resources like crazy. We're not going to have enough.
Yeah.
And then we went from there to why is the name escaping me? The street, the flooding call, we got bit in the cap. The final call.
Rock Springs. Gotcha.
So when we got to Rock Springs, we were doing that with 4 boats.
Mm-hmm.
And then another call came in on Oakland Road area where there was apparently somebody clinging to a tree. And we had to have Paul and Ray, they peeled off with 5 people and took off on that call while we were still on the flooding call.
Gotcha. Right.
And then they used County Fire, who are trained with Water Rescue Shore Based, to back them up as a support system. So. Yeah, it was just a pandemonium where we were able to peel people off on that call.
What's awesome is, so you got the chance to, basically, I know you're training, but you got to train on the job with all the guys on the crew first, like on that first call.
Right.
And then you're taking that same stuff that you learned there, you're moving to the next call, going to the next one. Did you notice you just got more efficient as this goes on?
Yeah, we did. And, you know, it's something we, if it's a normal year, not a drought year, we do a water rescue at least once a year.
Yeah.
The creeks flood, they're big for a week, and then they go back down again, and typically it's a homeless person, but we pull somebody out of the creek, and then it doesn't happen for another year. Well, since 2011, when we pulled one of the guys out of Guadalupe Creek, we haven't really done a lot of swift water rescues. We go out in the bay every once in a while, but we haven't done any swift water rescues because it's been a drought.
Right.
So yeah, it had been a few years since we did one, but yeah, after you do a couple, you're back into the game plan. Okay, I'm going to play this role every time. You play that role.
Mm-hmm.
Get guys in the boats, you know, downstream, upstream, and put the people in position. So, yeah, as you do it more, you definitely can. You're rehearsing for the next one.
Right, and then you're peeling guys off, and they're kind of following what you were doing as leader, and doing all of that. Okay, awesome.
There were a lot of lessons learned on that too, because you're able to take what we learned from those calls and.
Come on over here, bud.
Use them for the next event that comes up. So, you know, like having a fast attack team for initial deployment.
Cool, right.
Figure out what you got, come up with a game plan, and then bring other resources in and position them strategically where you need them to rescue.
Uh-huh.
Also, having the ability of the extra staffing was a huge help for us on that day. We had 8 additional, 8 plus people that were not here.
Right.
The ship before.
Shouldn't be, right.
So we were able to divide it up and go, hey, 5 people, you're going to be, if a second water event comes in, you're going to be able to address that. So it was good to have those extra resources that we wouldn't normally have.
And to sit and brief. So here's the thing. So you must have known that this was happening because there was a briefing beforehand. Was there pretty good knowledge this was going to happen? Like, the Coyote Creek overflows. They said something about like there's a diversion ability with the Anderson River or Anderson Creek.
Lower lying neighborhoods had already been identified.
Okay.
The Rock Springs area had flooded in 1997, but the conference call that night, we never expected this to happen.
It was so much more than we expected.
They were focused on rain.
Right.
And the water district was saying you need to focus on Anderson.
Right.
That's where the problem's going to be.
Because it's going to be flowing into Coyote Creek.
It's going to create an issue.
Right.
So that was where I think some of the breakdown from maybe some people higher up might have not been clear.
So water district's already aware of this. They're telling us.
This area flooded before.
This is the issue. This is going to happen again, but it's not being relayed top down. It's being laterally explained to you guys. So, I mean, that's the whole thing here. It's like, oh, and then, but I mean, you just got boats donated to you the other day. I mean, so was that just serendipitous, or was that somebody knew something was coming and they went, hey, we're
so here's the deal. So there's a grant fund, a grant program for the county of Santa Clara called SHSGP. Okay. SHSGP stands for State Homeland Security Grant Something Program. So we went to the SHSGP meeting. Oh, it's been at least 3 or 4 years ago when we started this, and we said, hey, there's a couple of agencies in California that have flood trailers, and if you go to the FEMA flood zone maps on the internet, you can see that San Jose actually is at pretty substantial risk for flooding the 50-year, the 100-year, the 500-year floods. And we looked at these zones and said, we are ill-prepared for flood disasters.
Right.
We have a lot of guys on the station here, the crew that are on the FEMA team, and went to Katrina. Mm-hmm. And they came back and said, guys, you need to have metal, square, flat-bottom John boats for flooding. And
what's the reason behind metal?
So, again, the metal
just deflate.
Well, you think about a normal swift water event. Typically, swift water is a creek. It has water flowing through it all the time.
Right.
And we use inflatable boats that are very stable in swift water
that can
go in and get the person out if it's in a river. A flood, on the other hand, could have a stop sign that's under 6 feet of water, you can't see the top of the stop sign. Sharp metal objects, so you need a very durable, very low draft boat that can skim through those things, and that you can lift and move over from flooded area to flooded area, that can also carry a high capacity people and their belongings and animals out of these flooded areas.
Gotcha.
So we knew we were ill prepared for this, so then we went to the SHSGP meetings and we started to ask for flood resources. We tried to ask for a trailer and 4 John boats. Couple of us went and we got laughed at, sneered at.
Because it's San Jose.
In the middle of the drought. Right.
Yeah. And yeah.
You try to educate people. You try to show
them. I love it though. I love this.
Yeah. 1955, there was a flood.
Yeah.
1965, there was a flood. 70s and 83, there was a flood.
83.
86.
Sure. Remember that.
I grew up in Lake Orville, Orville Dam. I grew up 2 miles
just
away.
Yeah. Yeah.
I watched Yuba City go under 20 feet of water in 1986 when they opened up the spillway all the way. They didn't do that this time. 2011, there was a flood. So when you start looking at the history of California in the past 50, 60 years, you try to educate people in a drought that you need flood resources, and you kind of get scoffed at.
Sure.
So instead of giving us 4 boats, they gave us 2.
Okay.
The boats were down at the fire shop right before Hollister flooded. Chief Crivello said, I want you guys to go down and get those boats, put them in a trailer. We borrowed a medical trailer from the training center, and we put them into a trailer, and lo and behold, they got used that night for Hollister, and we've been using them since. So, yeah, we knew it was coming, and just luckily, at least we got 2 of those boats coming that we used this year that were only went into service in October.
That's amazing. And you have a couple more coming?
Well, so
I'm guessing now.
Yes. So now I'm going to go back to the SHSGP grant, and I think I'm going to have a little more horsepower. We're asking the city council for more money, and I think we're going to get some more resources out of this. We are a reactionary community,
of course.
I'm hoping we can get some more resources for floods again.
It definitely is nice that finally fire, we have, in the midst of crisis is always a case, we finally get a nice good light shined on us.
Yeah, absolutely. We are a reactionary community. I wish we could be listened to a little bit strongly. We try to prepare for the worst, at least the USAR does, because the USAR does structural collapse and trench rescues, water rescues, those types of things. They don't come all the time, but when they do come, you need the resources and for equipment, and you are going to be underneath the camera watching from CNN Live, New York streaming, so all eyes are going to be on you when they do occur.
Of course, yeah. So it sounds like, 20-plus homeless you got at Los Lagos Golf
Correct.
Course?
Yeah.
30 homes at East Williams. How many people were at that?
I want to say there was around, I've been hearing numbers. I want to say there was like 80 or 90, 100, something like that.
And how are you saving most of them? How are you getting them out?
So again, most of those people that we're doing is we're taking the John boats. We're
You're actually
them up
pulling
to their,
them physically, getting them in the boat and taking them out. They weren't able to actually get themselves out.
No, so you pull the John boat to the front door, everybody hop in, And we're going to take you out in a John boat.
There you go.
And the John boats, I mean, I think, I saw one of them come out with 19 people, but I heard numbers of 21, 22 in the boats, packed into these boats that really are only ready for a few, you know, 6-7 people.
So they're how big was the dimension of?
So the boats are 16 feet long. They're okay. About probably 4.5 feet wide.
Yeah.
So they're not huge.
No, right,
so they're literally packed with people. And that's what we talked about. We need more boats. Because we're packing these people in.
Displacement, gotcha. Yeah. Right, right.
And you need them, you need them.
Right. And I mean, as far as maintenance goes on them,
nothing.
Yeah, there's zero, right?
Zero.
You
the just last
you clean
years,
them every
yeah.
couple of week, months or so.
Right.
And then over at Rock Springs, 100 plus apartments. Some people are saying 200 people. Some people said 500 people. Some people saying 15,000 people.
How many
people?
I'm guessing around 250.
250 people.
This is yeah. kind of the feel that I got.
How many did you hump out on your
oh,
back?
I think I stopped counting after my third boatload. So 60, 50. 60,
yeah.
You know, and we're all operating in teams of 3 or 4.
Yeah, you guys were, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And stabilizing the boat because we had put so much weight in the boat. Luckily, the waters are very calm, mm-hmm. so we physically,
move that over here.
We just,
it's going to kill us over there. Yep.
It's, it was, you know, we were physically either walking the boats out or mm-hmm. we were paddling out.
Right, right.
So, certainly, you know, you just begin to become overwhelmed with the numbers. You lose. You're just on to the next operation. You're not, mm-hmm. you know, the ability to count after
doesn't
50
even
or
matter. Yeah.
It doesn't
it
even
just,
matter
it's
anymore.
Like, yeah.
It's just you know there's yeah. you're sending out search teams that are going out and identifying who is in need of evacuation, mm-hmm. and the numbers that were coming back from those teams were. Okay, we got 20 in this apartment complex or in this apartment building. We got 15 here and we got 12 here. So you're just kind of plowing through the numbers at that
yeah.
point.
Yeah. How do you, now walk me through that. So I know that they first said there's no citywide alarm system. There's no siren alarm system. That's mm-hmm. a big thing. Licardo's taking the blame for. Nothing's set up. So how are you talking to these people? You got bullhorns?
We're using bullhorns, yeah. and we're talking face to face. We're literally treading through the water,
yeah.
either paddling through or walking through, which is what a lot of us had to do. And we're making face to face contact with the people mm-hmm. and finding out how many people are there. Of those people, how many have disabilities that are going to need assistance to be evacuated? How many children are there? How many elderly are there? And and that, based on that information that we get, we begin to establish a pick list of what the most critical people are to get out first.
Yeah, for sure, dude. Yeah.
So that's a, you know, I think
John was in every one of the rescues as well. He was in the swiftwater boats, chainsawing through the creeks mm-hmm. to get to the homeless who were in like a jungle.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
he was in the boat, I think, just about every time mm-hmm. during all of our rescues.
You were like Kurtz, like going up the river in
oh, yeah.
Apocalypse
yeah, we were
Now.
Doing it.
yeah, yeah.
That's right.
Right
yeah.
on, right
yeah.
on. All right.
No,
so you're,
was,
okay, so you're Martin Sheehan.
Right,
going,
right.
Talk,
yeah, I was smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, yeah.
A little,
shirt off.
You know, shirt off, sweating.
Uh-huh, yeah. right.
But I think each operation was different mm-hmm. in and of itself because the conditions that we were encountering on each emergency were different.
Right.
Paul and I and another rescuer who were on the first op, one of our victims was physically pinned in the water by debris.
Wow.
And so
okay.
when we managed to cut through all this brush and all this debris to get to him and his wife, I guess.
Sure.
We couldn't evacuate him. We literally had to untangle him from debris mm-hmm. to be able to get him into the boat.
Yeah.
Which required me and another rescuer getting out of the boat and actually having to swim to him. And physically work through getting them out, then getting them into the boat versus the flood evacuations where we were dealing with pure numbers. Numbers, numbers,
right.
numbers.
Right. Where, so this is a high risk.
This much more high risk.
Low,
you have
right.
fast moving water, you
yeah.
have a lot of debris, you have a lot of entanglement potential
mm-hmm.
It's not that
Dude. Common.
It's not that common
to have, at least for us, to have person trapped in moving water,
yeah.
feet entrapped.
Yeah, feet. I mean,
that's
flash
like,
flood
looks
type
like
rescue.
Worst case scenario.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Matter of fact, one event, the Los Lagos, I was standing on the shore with my megaphone, and
yeah.
John, who is on the boats, their prop fouled because it had too much debris on it, so they were hanging onto a tree with a guy with a knife cutting away all the stuff to try to get their boat back in service again. So mm-hmm. it can be tough in some of these situations Jeez. Because it's just not clean water and you're trying to, you know,
yeah.
not become a victim yourself. And it's tough. It can be.
Especially when you want, it's high risk, it's high threat, and you got to act right away. You got to risk a lot, save a lot, like I always
Correct.
Say. Right. So you're not, there's no real pre-planning into going when someone's getting sucked under the water.
No.
You got to act and say, hey,
from a risk management perspective, it's, you know, your decision is it tenable enough for me to get to that victim?
Just tenable, then I'll do it.
Just tenable, not, you're not looking for perfect conditions, you're looking for, is there a physical way that I can get there and get back and be able to effect the rescue safely?
Right.
And
every person that we pulled out of there had been in the water for 48 hours.
Wow. So yeah, they're already dealing hypothermia.
Hypothermia issues. It was cold. They were there all night. They're in the rain. They're standing in water. So they're not able to really help because their body is shutting down and because of hypothermia. So that was a challenge.
There's also the risk of getting bit by a cat in your hand.
Oh yeah. Okay. You know, hey, look. So there's animals are feral when they get scared. Come on over here, buddy.
Yeah, tell them about the cat, Nick.
Do we not want to talk about it?
It's okay. We got
leave back the cat, Nick.
We can talk about it.
So. Very cool. So, how high the water? How high is the water where you guys are talking at this point?
Well,
because I saw it at the top of the car.
8 feet.
8 feet.
It was over there.
Jesus. Okay.
Yeah, there was no way. Yeah. There were multiple instances where we couldn't stand.
That's crazy.
Even in the flood areas, and it ultimately got to what, 5 feet.
It was chest deep, I'd say.
It got to the point where we were having trouble walking.
Yeah, because the life check gets...
Yeah, right.
Buoying,
yeah. Were there any fatalities? Anything that...
To our knowledge, there were no fatalities. That we
Amazing.
Knew, right. Now, whether something creeped up after the waters receded, someone who had succumbed, mm-hmm. but we just didn't have any knowledge of it. But to our knowledge, I don't think anybody has been found.
Amazing. Fantastic job,
the
gentlemen.
The communication system in the homeless community where we were getting a lot of the creek-involved rescues.
Yeah, yeah.
They were they're a pretty tight-knit group.
Sure.
And they were saying, you know, we know people are here in these areas throughout the... And, you know, whether they left last night or they left 2 days ago.
Wow, so they even remember the people... They are a total little community, huh?
Yeah. Pretty interesting to see.
Yeah. It's like caveman style stuff.
Culture. Oh,
yeah. It totally is. It's a little world underneath the world there. That's crazy. There's all sorts of wildness over there. So let's hear about the cat, Nick.
It's Tabby.
I think
Garfield. So we have a Swiftwater Rescue. You've saved two homeless people over here, and then meanwhile you're working on a house. You come across a wild beast. Walk me through it.
Well, it was that was actually on the flooding call, so it was actually my partner. We were bringing back a boatload of people, and
literally a boatload of people.
A boatload of people, at least probably 15 people in the boat, and it was actually Ryan, and he saw this cat was swimming, and it was kind of in the middle of nowhere, and
just right paddling.
It was kind of trying
cat
to...
Cat dog paddling, is it?
I mean, pretty much it was, and it was going down. It looked like it was doing so well, so Ryan's like, hey, the cat right here, I'm going to go grab it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he grabs the cat, throws it in the boat, cat immediately freaks out, jumps out of the boat on the side of the boat where I'm standing, and the cat goes underwater. So the cat's underwater for a few seconds, people are screaming in the boat, and the cat pops up like 5 feet away from me. You know, it's kind of instinct, reached out and grabbed it, and... As I went to grab by its scruff and pulled in the boat, it reached around and bit me on the finger.
Let me see it. Yeah, have you got? Ooh, there. Okay.
Yeah. So a couple.
Did you get shots? What's going on?
Yeah. So the concern was not only.
You're not going to lose it.
I don't think so. I've been on medications, antibiotics, just as precautionary. But
swelled up,
nice and pretty. It did swell up.
A little lollipop.
Yeah, I finally got my flexibility back after a few days.
Oh Jesus!
But the biggest concern was not only the fact that it could have been a feral cat, is the water we were in was heavily contaminated. We had dumpsters floating around and trash and potential for human waste and sewage is in the water. So with an open wound,
absolutely, yeah, yeah.
You know, the risk was high.
So was it just debris? Was it homeless waste you're worried about? Or was there actually
it was like a
septic or sewage lines had blown?
Sewage lines had all been
They had.
Yeah, okay.
At one point, we were worried about manhole covers bubble into the surface and
Yeah.
Those were starting to rise. You could see the air bubbles coming up, so that could have been an entrapment for us.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, there was an actual safety alert.
There was actually multiple manhole covers were popping up. And
they'd suck you back underneath, huh? Or you could at least get hit by them?
You could go in.
Yeah, you could go into it.
We're wearing PFDs, our life vests.
But for victims.
But anybody, for a victim not wearing one and they're trying to wade through the water, yeah, they could easily, you know, got sucked down. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, drop down in it. So, mm-hmm. You know, the cat was just one of many animals we rescued that trip. I mean,
there
I think about
horses,
every boatload.
I saw pictures of stables.
That was at the end.
Yeah.
Every boatload that I took out at least had, you know, the neighbors or the people's pets, dogs. Mm-hmm. We even took out a big bird cage of birds, mm-hmm. birds in it. So, and there was Sean and them rescued. Yeah.
No snakes. It's like the first time there's... Usually there's always a story where somebody's got a boa constrictor
alligator or something.
There was the skunks. The skunks did get out from underneath the house. That was actually
Ryan.
They did, so that was actually Ryan again, the animal rescuer.
It was actually
Ryan did all the rescues. So we were coming up to another house and he heard just some, it sounded like, first he thought it was a child. We heard some kind of just screaming, and as we got closer, it sounded like a pig maybe being killed.
I
realized it was coming from underneath the house, and I think I told Ryan, I'm like, hey, it's probably a possum or a skunk under there. So Ryan happened to see a broomstick nearby and punched out the crawl space vent, and a couple skunks came swimming out. So he saved some skunks, and I got bit by the cat.
All is right in the world.
All is right in the world. So,
no shortage of skunks in San Jose.
Yeah,
they're all over the damn. No pigs? You didn't know we saw any pigs?
No pigs. All that noise is coming from the skunks that were trapped in the crawl space, and they were drowned, and they didn't have a way out. So Ryan saved some skunks, and then a couple of our guys, I think it was Sean, I don't know who else on it, three or four horses they opened up the pen to, with some bolt cutters, and the horses were trapped, so I don't know much about that. I wasn't there for that.
So all, what's that called?
No dogs,
what? No dogs. They get away. They know what they're doing. So all told, you guys are on scene. You're there 3 days? No relief, because
We were on duty too, and then one day at holdover. So the first day was all prep. We were anticipating the storm and getting all the gear ready. Second day, the rain started coming, and then it was probably a 30 hours straight where
it started back.
We never went on a medical call. Mm-hmm. It was water rescue to water rescue to water rescue. Really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. How were they dispatching, like, as, like, alarm? What kind of compliments you get?
There was a little bit of chaos because I think, you know, we had sent out preemptive emails going, hey, this is coming.
Yeah.
If you get an event, this is what you request. You know, it was already in policy, but we just kind of refreshed the guys on that. But the other thing was getting dispatch up to speed. So the first of dispatches, you could tell they were trying to get the right verbiage with what trailers needed to go, what equipment needed to go.
Yeah.
And by, I think, the third or fourth water rescue, there are 34, all your water rescue equipment going to whatever address they were going to. Everybody go.
Everybody pick up and go there. Yeah. Everybody, yeah, of course. Well, but I mean, if you got to do it, you got to do it. Give me some other stories. Give me some highlights. Who shined out there? Who had the people piggybacking them out?
Jesse, right? That was Jesse. Yeah,
there was a lot of guys.
Jesse did that.
Big language barriers in that area. It's a bit high Vietnamese population, large Hispanic population.
Which area? Which event was this?
For the flooding detail.
Yeah, which
Rock
flooding?
Springs,
Fox Springs.
Rock Springs.
Yeah.
Rock
Springs.
You know, everybody, we were trying to coax onto the boat. Some of them wanted to go, some of them didn't want to go. They didn't understand, I think, the magnitude of the area that was impacted. So I think there was the language barrier was a challenge trying to get them to.
Yeah.
The other unique thing that was, we couldn't get one of the, I think it was Keys and 12th Street, the apartment complex is there, Station 3's district had flooded. We had called for VTA buses.
Yeah,
to get the folks out of the weather and the rain, and and then transport them from their apartment to the where we had the Red Cross set up, which is at James Lake High School.
Yeah.
Large population of Hispanics in there. they did not trust law enforcement. They did not trust. They thought right. it was a. They thought it was a
shakedown or something.
They thought it was a sting, and they did not want to get on the buses. Whatever.
It's a hell of a sting. You got.
Well, it's a challenge because you got these kids are standing in rain. It's cold.
Yeah.
And you're trying to help them, but yet you understand where they're coming from. Going, you know, they can't really trust it. So it was a really unique situation to be in. Definitely caught us off guard.
Yeah, we were just talking about it. It sucks. Those, you know, they're already low social economic situation there. Mm-hmm. Probably don't have insurance on their houses or their cars, and now they're totally screwed.
Well, I think they're totally vulnerable at that point.
Right.
You know? And then they're being put into a position they don't know anybody. And people are telling them to collectively get on a bus.
Right.
When traditionally, you know, that's a bad sign.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
So like, you could understand their
apprehension. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's got to be frustrating for you.
It's very frustrating, particularly because of what Paul had said about the children. You know, you got kids.
Yeah, you're watching kids,
You know, and they're refusing. They're saying, okay, we got friends coming. Well, those friends are coming from 4 or 5 hours away.
Right.
I got family driving up from L.A. right now.
Oh, great. We'll see you next week.
No forward warning to this. Yeah. A lot of the people, us knocking on their door was their first realization that they were in a flood. They had no idea. We'd be knocking on doors, and they open the doors to seeing the whole neighborhood flooded.
So it's not into their house yet, but it's
on the second story homes. No,
right,
no,
second
on
story.
The first story, so, okay. Some people are waking up to
water
coming in their house. To basically have us tell them, hey, you have 5 minutes. Pack any bag you can. You got to leave. Mandatory evacuation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and to be forced with having to get on a bus. I mean. A lot of information during a short amount of time.
Yeah, right.
That one guy that's semi-disabled, he said the helicopter actually woke him up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he got out of bed, and there's a foot of water in his house. You know, that was his first.
Jesus,
his first warning. Pretty crazy.
So, I mean, here's the thing. Like, now everybody's, for some reason, pointing fingers, and they're trying to say, like, this is so-and-so. Is anybody really at fault here? Who are we looking at that would really be the fault? Or is this, I mean, how much of this is just an act of God?
Well, that, I don't think anyone's at fault for the event. I think what people are trying to find, what could we have done to make mediating this kind of call better, more efficient? Why couldn't people have had better notice? Why couldn't we have had better or more appropriate or more numbers of equipment? Is there something that we could have done before the event to make the event go smoother?
Mm-hmm.
And I think traditionally in any political environment, you're going to find people trying to point the finger
mm-hmm.
to assign some sort of responsibility, whether that's for political gain or some other personal agenda.
Right, right.
I think that historically that's how it's always been. And unfortunately, I think we're right in the middle of that as well.
Yeah, it's always the case. We get stuck in the middle while we're saving lives.
But we also have to be realistic. Careers. I think it's important that we're honest with ourselves is that there are things that we could have done better.
Mm.
You know, had we had some more boats.
Yeah, let's go. Let's wait for this.
Well, you know, there was
let's let them finish up and then we'll,
wait till light goes off.
Because that's a decent point.
They talk more than I do. Once they start going.
They get quiet. And then they come out.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like the cat.
Mm-hmm. I can't talk at all. That's how it always is every day.
Example of being proactive in terms of getting out and letting the people know what the potential was.
Uh-huh.
Engine 24, Captain Vieira mm-hmm. took his crew out on his own, and
on Saturday,
so before the big storms came, and they walked their first due, the creek area,
mm-hmm. of course,
or whatever areas were susceptible to flooding. And they went out and made face-to-face contact with all these people, and not a single rescue came out of 24's area as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because someone took the initiative and went out there and made contact with the local people. And I think that's a really good example of how we can, as an organization or as a department, as a city, you got to have a means of reaching out to these people and letting them know, because sending out a mass page or a mass text is just not, it's just not going to happen.
It's not practical.
It's really not going to reach those people.
Well, like you're saying, the homeless are already notifying each other. If you can just get into that hotline, they're going to take care of the rest, which is what Joe did. That makes sense.
We talked about a helicopter, even to do more evacs, to have a helicopter with a loudspeaker that can, you know, fly over and give this kind of a siren with a speech that's saying you need to get out, you know, danger is imminent. So that is something to do in the future that Cal Fire talked about.
Has that been done anywhere before? I guess so. I mean, anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard helicopters for riot control do that type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it wouldn't be that hard to do it for this type of thing as well.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I mean, so as far, I couldn't think of a better scenario for us as far as response goes. You got out hundreds and hundreds of people. So far, no casualties. All of you guys are safe. And, you know, utilization of all the equipment was exemplary. Fantastic.
I think it's a testament to all the work, all the training, all the preparation and kind of success and management that a lot of these, the officers and Paul and Apollo and looking down the road based on their experiences in Katrina and Oklahoma City and everything else. And I think that's why it went so smooth, was because of that.
Right, right. And so you all pretty much do little other response teams to different, or you're part of the response teams for natural disasters?
Yeah, for Apollo, Jeff, myself, we're all part of the FEMA task force
out
of Menlo Park. So a lot of the information that we get from there, we try to bring back here to educate our crews and to bring them up to speed on what the bigger global response plan is to a large-scale event like that.
So right.
Flooding is... a lot of the things that we encountered in Hurricane Katrina were lessons that we brought here. That's how the trailers, you know, a lot of the little tools and equipment and things that we need. Hey, this is nice to have. We learned this in Katrina.
Yeah, right.
If we have an event here, this is would be good to have.
Exactly. This equipment. We actually need this versus that.
That worked well. Coyote Creek, I think, was, I think for me, it kind of caught us off guard. I was more expecting the Alviso area because that's like the known, it's below sea level.
Exactly, yeah.
This is kind of our target area where we think we're going to have an issue, and then lo and behold, right in our first due, 34's first due, we get 3 to 4 rescues back to back to back, all within a few hours of each other.
And I mean, a couple of, like, what was it, Rock Creek?
Yeah.
Didn't even, they weren't even worried about that area flooding, right? That wasn't even in part of the briefing.
There were maps, and there was discussion about it from responders years past, Kevin Conant.
So,
had posted a ton of stuff on social media that said, hey, FYI, you know, he's retired and he's right here. In 1997, this happened, and lo and behold, it happened again. So,
good for him. But that's him. Always thinking ahead of the game. Anything else, guys? You want to put anybody on the spot now that they're gone? Hey, fantastic job. I just want to come by and hang out with you guys because you're heroes.
Wow.
And I'm lonely sitting in my house. But really, fantastic job. And I just want to get your point of view versus like having the news talking that, you know, about you. Like, I just want our story told. I think it's just amazing. Really,
I think he covered a lot of it. It took a lot of work by a lot of people, and I think the commitment and the commitment to our profession really kind of rose to the top.
Yeah,
it really did. I mean, guys were working on no sleep, no food.
That's amazing. Yeah,
you know, and dedication. never missed a beat. No one tapped out. No one got too tired. Everybody was tired, but you just pushed through.
Yeah,
pretty impressive.
And your training takes over.
Yeah,
and you really, I don't know. In other big cities, how often they train in USAR or heavy rescue. But, I mean, you guys are on it weekly.
I think
you got a great drill set, you know, models out back. And, you know,
those low-frequency, high-risk events require lots of training or people get hurt.
Right.
You know, and that's pretty common throughout the USAR community.
Yeah.
In most cities, if they have a dedicated team, for the most part,
they're all over.
I think they're pretty high intensity in terms of training.
Good.
Just out of self preservation or anything else.
Well, the city of San Jose is lucky to have you guys and your expertise. Thanks very much for talking on the podcast.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
And anytime you want to come on and talk about yourselves, let me know. Or your pops. You know, our dads work together. All right, good. This is Kent Valance. And if you got it, use it. Take care. Station 34, USAR and Engine, the heroes of San Jose's floods 2017.
Cafe before the war, and us all smiles and stares as we were putting up chairs, and we laughed as they closed down the store. You, eyes of cerulean, God knows what they've seen or been through. May I be so bold to have and to hold until I grow old. I swear by God and by you. With me inside. storm passed overnight. Let me try that one more time.
Hey. Well, he's just leaving. He's not even coming back. He took the car and left. Unless he's been